our broadcast partners to hear our program weekdays at 6 p.m., 7 a.m., and 9 a.m., or stream online at mediasanctuary.org. You can also find us on your favorite podcast platform.
You can also support this show by...
Hi, I'm Rachel T.
Hi, I'm Eva.
Hi, I'm Rachel G.
We are all Girl Scouts, and this is WGXC ACRA.
The river flows tranquilly on. The flowers are red, and this is Infinite Contact. Join me, Theo 3, for forgotten frequencies and cinematic live vinyl and cassette mix journeys that bend genres and warp timelines. From deep electro vaults to dusty spiritual jazz, obscure hip-hop beats to cosmic synthscapes. Each episode is a transmission from the past and future of the infinite I Am Presence. Lock in Saturdays, 4 to 6 p.m.
Can you hear the news and station
only
ID?
Only at 90.7 FM.
No, I cannot.
WGXC.
Columbia County Sanctuary Movement is
like
a nonprofit organization based in Columbia County that organizes immigrants and allies to collectively support, empower, and defend our communities. CCSM offers programs that assist newly arrived individuals, including food programs, mutual aid funds, legal support services, and opportunities to organize and be an activist. You can find more information on social media at CCSMNY or by calling 518-303-3848.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Portia of Catchville, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
In the city. The sirens moan. I can't escape the beating question, where do I belong? Boundary lines lie before me, I cross into the unknown. I try to leave my fear. Try to carry on. Every day sing a song of praise. We've come this far by grace. And when you pray to find your place, love will lead the way.
Good evening, my friends, family, and community at large. Thank you for joining us. I am Kimberly Irwin, host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, awayfarm.org Enterprise, where every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. We have it to combat racism because education is key and discussion a must. And now let's start talking here where...
No topic is taboo.
Woo-hoo-hoo! Guess who was talking there? Guest talker number one. We actually only have one this time, and it's Dr. Beavers from the University of Pennsylvania. And with him, you know, we have our very own Garrett Roche. And he is producing the music for the show and hosts the podcast, The Roche Solid Truth. And the music you just heard was a jazz soul piece that jumped my soul and stirs my mind and set the mood and rhythm for reflection. And the title was Lead the Way by Liz Wright. And we are so thankful to have, like I said, our guest, Dr. Herman Beavers here. And he's the one who kind of collated all the music and some of the poetry that you'd be hearing, and even some of the words of wisdom. And actually, I think he just did the entire show, because even the talk term wokeness came from him and something that he had sent to us. So this is a fabulous time to listen, because it's Thanksgiving this month, right? And Garrett, and
indeed,
we are definitely wanting to give thanks, and that's how we came up with this title of the theme show for today. And one of the things that I always think about when creating a title is what do I want to talk about in the show? And this title definitely makes it, makes for what comes next. And what comes next, Freedom Under Fire, is a great poem. I wanted to share a poem that totally frees my soul and my mind, just like this music by Liz, right, did, because of who makes the poetry. And this was my uncle, America's Moses Cash III, or as we like to call him in and around the city of Hudson, Butch. He has so many other names too, but America's Moses Cash III created this poem that I'm going to read. And I had a little accident. So some part of my right side of my mouth is a little bit still feeling a little bit hard. It's hard for me to speak a little bit, but I really want to read this poem to really introduce this topic. So the title is Black Arts, My Soul is Burning. And it comes from, again, America's Moses Cash III, who is a person I'm giving thanks for having him in my life. And I think you'll enjoy this poem, and also will give thanks that he was so creative. My soul is burning because of the soul food that was put on my table day after day. My soul is burning because of the black boys and girls I grew up with and played with and shared dreams with. My soul is burning because of what I witnessed in these black churches, people crying because they had the Spirit of the Lord in them. They sang sweet songs like Come Home to Jesus and Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, and other songs that make all the church members and visitors and the strong black preachers feel good. My soul is burning for the black people that I associated with throughout my early years in the inner city. My soul is burning because I wanted to be somebody and get off the corners of the streets where we did a lot of dreaming to be Hollywood stars. My soul is burning because as teenagers we were stars, but we didn't know it. My soul is burning because I wanted to fly like Superman until Superman jumped off a tall building and killed himself. My soul is burning because I wanted to be like my dad and make money, and I did. My soul is burning because everything good was white, and I wanted to be good and white, so I put white string in my nappy hair and shook my head back and forth. My soul is burning because I really was glad to be black when I saw in person Johnny Sample, the great football player for the Baltimore Colts. My soul is burning because I saw many times in person James, please, 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 Brown. My soul is burning because a movie was being shot in a town that I spent part of my life in, and it was called Odds Against Tomorrow, starring Harry Belafonte, a black and famous actor and singer, and he was a good image for me. My soul is burning because I was getting older and I wanted to be like Wilt Chamberlain, the famous professional basketball player. My soul is burning because I was introduced to not only black music, but also to black artists in the music industry. People like Jackie Wilson, Fats Domino, Nat King Cole, Sarah Vaughan, Marian Anderson, The Temptations, the list of singers was long. My soul is burning because of the first book by a black man I read, Man Child in the Promised Land by the distinguished writer Claude Brown. But I found out later he was only one of many black writers, such as County Cullen, James Weldon Johnson, Langston Hughes, Phyllis Wheatley, T.A. Rogers, Gene Toomer, James Baldwin, Richard Wright, Frank Yerby, John Oliver Killens, Luis Merriweather, Maya Angelou, Nikki Giovanni, Quincy Troop, Askia Muhammad, Torre, Don L. Lee, Mars Hill. The list goes on and on. My soul is burning because of the first play I ever saw was Golden Boy, starring James Earl Jones and Sammy Davis Jr., and they are great black actors. And I vowed to myself to see more plays with blacks in them. My soul is burning because I know that the nation of black people everywhere can stand tall and take a bow for great achievements against all odds. My soul is burning for my black brethren who are great artists, and I do mean great, at whatever they set out to do. And this means you. My soul is burning. My soul is burning. My soul is burning. And that's from the Black Bard, Book of Moses, America's Moses Cash III. And I must add that these people that he mentioned in the book, when he said he knew them in his poem, when he knew them, he did. He was actually drafted of an NBA player for the Philadelphia 76ers. And he knew a lot of people in New York, and like many of these people he named and some he didn't name. And I just, again, want to shout out to his family who may be listening in New York City, his daughter, Kali Irwin, more importantly, too. Okay, so I know I told you we have a great showstopper here, because that was one of the poems that was to actually stir the mind of you so that you can hear the guest that I'm about to introduce. I'm going to pull up his bio because there's nothing I can remember. It's long and I really had to do my best to shorten it a bit. And I did. So I'm going to introduce Dr. Herman Beavers. I'm going to say that one more time. Dr. Herman Beavers, Julie Baron Platt and Mark E. Platt, President's Distinguished Professor of English and Africana Studies from the University of Pennsylvania. Now, this is my alma mater, but I didn't get an opportunity to be a student of his when I was there. So let me share with you who I missed out having taught me. When it comes to this intersection of literature, community, and the sound of jazz and the written word, few people groove like Dr. Herman Beavers. For more than three decades at the University of Pennsylvania, Professor Beavers has shaped how generations of students understand African-American storytelling from the blues echoes of Southern modernism to the lyrical fire of the 21st century poetry. A powerhouse in both scholarship and creative writing, Dr. Beaver's classes like his celebrated Trading Fours, the Literatures of Jazz, move with rhythm and intellect. He also co-leads August Wilson and Beyond, a community-based course that unites Penn students with West Philadelphia neighbors to explore Wilson's iconic plays and gather the live stories, the lived stories of everyday people. His poetry sings across pages and anthologies, from the Langston Hughes Colloquy and Cleaver Magazine to the collections Obsession Sestinas for the 21st Century, Who Will Speak for America, and his own The Vernell Poems. Actually, I want to say that we read one of the Vernell poems in the car coming here. We enjoyed that that really very much. So we're hoping that he definitely shares with us one of his poems from either that work or some other one. His gallery voice is just as commanding with geography and the political imaginary in the novels of Toni Morrison, earning high praise for its insight and heart. Recognized around the world, Dr. Beaver spent 2023 as a resident fellow at La Maison du Dormoir in Minerbes, France, and will soon step into the presidency of the Modern Language Association, MLA, in 2026, where he's, I think, the vice president right now. He also lends his wisdom to the advisory boards of Modern Fiction Studies, the Black Scholar, Public Humanities, and African American Review. I'm getting there, guys. I'm losing my voice a little bit. Hang in there with me. A scholar, poet, and bridge builder, Dr. Herman Beavers brings his soul to this conversation. He's a perfect match for the Race Talks mic today, and actually possibly every day, because that's what we talk about, Africana studies, because I'm African-American, of course. Welcome, Dr. Herman Beavers. Welcome to the show. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, can you share a few statements or such about why you feel that Race Talks is a great place for you to be here to discuss some of the things we're about to discuss today?
Well, I was reading an article in Esquire magazine, and it was listing by a Black essayist, and it was listing all these words that you couldn't say, and race was one of the words that you couldn't say anymore. So
I just dropped my jaw. What?
because conservatives don't want to talk about race. So, you know, given how quickly DEI disappeared from the public view, talking about race is something that I want to do all the time.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes. And we have the talk term wokeness, because they've stolen the word wokeness from us too. They're just taking it all away. Well, before we get into having, the discussion on the term woke, I know that you teach poetry. You have done so for quite a while, and I've actually seen a video of yours where you say poetry matters, and you talk a little bit about how you conceptualize poetry for your students. Can you share a little bit about your how do you go into creating poetry that moves and that matters?
Well, I would say I wish I had a formula, but I don't. Every poem is different. But one way that I think about poetry is that, to sort of paraphrase William Carlos Williams, poetry is like a machine, that everything has to work in order for and work in concert for the poem to be effective. So the challenge there is the poem has to operate silently and seamlessly. So you can't hear the machinery clanking in the poem. You can't see the seams where the poem has been fastened together. It has to work in a seamless, almost natural or organic fashion. And one of the things that I think about in my poems is I try to not be bound by the rules of sentences and paragraphs. Mm. I because jazz is such an influence on my work, I think in terms of phrasing. I'm more likely to put together phrases that look good to my eye on the page. And then I use punctuation as a way to figure out where to put pauses and where to put emphasis in the poem. And I try to have a strong beginning and a strong ending in my poems.
And when you speak about strong beginning and endings, do they include the topic itself?
I stay away from the idea of poetry as being topical. You know, I know that that's a legacy that came to us from the Black Arts Movement, that people wrote a lot about what was going on around them.
Right.
And it's not that I don't do that from time to time, but I'm usually casting my net a little bit wider. And because I think a lot about history and the archive, history works its way into my poetry. So I'm working on a project right now that history is very important to the book, much more so than what's happening in the present moment.
So what part of history do you favor?
Well, I favor the present moment because this is where I am. But I'm interested in the post-Reconstruction era.
Ah, I love
where,
that.
Where,
yes.
You know, white people in the South took back all of the things that Black people were able to achieve during Reconstruction, you know, voting rights and citizenship. And post-Reconstruction, all of those things disappeared very quickly. And that absence was reinforced by violence.
As an educator, what would you say to the not teaching of this type of stuff in schools? I mean, I can't recall learning about Reconstruction in high school. I had to wait till college for me to understand or get a whiff of the fact that Black people were actually represented in Congress during that time period. And then it ended.
Well, part of the problem is that we tend to think of American history like melodrama, like it's a melodrama. And so we want to be the good guys in American history. And, you know, the fact is we eradicated one population and enslaved another. That's just part of our history. And I think when you shrink away from that, you don't give yourself as a country the opportunity to learn from it and grow from it and internalize the notion that this is not a way for human beings to behave. And so when we rob children of the opportunity to study their history in all its complexity, and I emphasize that word complexity, no one is saying that American history is simply atrocities and violence. It's not. But when we ignore those things, all of the things that people want to emphasize, it's like creating one of those movie sets where there's nothing behind it.
Well, that statement leads me to our word of wisdom. I call them wows. Writers are forged as a sword is forged in Injustice by Ernest Hemingway. Does that mean something to you?
It does. I'm trying to remember who, probably one of my professors in graduate school is one that turned me on to that statement. you know, writers, you know, so when Hemingway talks about injustice, it could be a bad childhood. It could be growing up poor. It could be, you know, having an abusive parent. It could be growing up an orphan without parents. It could be any number of things. But I think Hemingway's point is that, you know, you're forged as a sword. You're hardened and prepared because you learn to look straight at life and its trials and tribulations.
Now, let's talk about wokeness. I wanted to get to that term. What does it mean in general, being woke? And then what's the noun wokeness mean that's so is taken aback, or I should say certain people in our American government feels like it's not acceptable to be used? Or actually, not even just people in the government. I know that there were some people in the media who, you know, are, it's across parties, even Democrats, and not just, you know. So,
well, yeah. It started.
Talk to me about that wokeness.
It started during the summer of 2020, during the Black Lives Matter movement, where black people were saying to one another, stay woke. So it was about remaining conscious of what was going on. And it was about awareness and expanding your political awareness to understand circumstances of the moment that had to do with the devaluation of Black life. So saying stay woke was, you know, an exhortation. But once the white media took it up, and the person that I blame for this in part is James Carville, who is a Democratic strategist.
Yes, I know.
After the 2022 elections, he went on this long rant on MSNBC where he said, you know, the problem is that, you know, we need to get rid of this woke stuff. We need to get rid of it. And, you know, my wife was telling me that she was in a meeting and somebody basically, a white person, one of her white colleagues basically said the same thing. And she realized when she pressed him on it, he didn't even really know what it meant. Mm. So, you know, in the United States, in the U.S. English language, there are words that become ciphers that start off meaning one thing and then you can make them mean anything else. So right around this time, you know, a guy named Christopher Rufo starts talking about critical race theory, and he equates critical race theory, which is taught in law schools and is really not taught to young people at all, taught in law schools and really is about, you know, expanding the sort of narrative possibilities of the law. He takes that and he connects it to woke. And it took a while for me to realize this, the term woke and wokeness, what they really are. They are an injunction aimed at white people who might find themselves persuaded by U.S. history that is taught the right way.
I concur.
Who would then, you know, challenge their teachers, go home and challenge their family. So you know, if you grew up in Alabama and you're a young person in the present moment and something about the civil rights movement comes on and you ask your grandfather, you know, granddad, you know, where did you stand on the civil rights movement? You know, were you out there protesting with the black folks or were you throwing bottles at them? And there's a kind of comeuppance that happens. And so the sort of media educational machinery ramped up to really mitigate the possibility of that happening, because once that term became associated with DEI and black people being in the foreground, once that happened, the conservative movement was then able to turn that and say, see, this is about silencing you white people. This is about making you feel bad. This is about making you hate America. So it's pretty simplistic. It's not whoever made that turn is not a candidate for the Nobel Prize in economics or literature. Let me put it that way. But it's very effective because we live in a moment of sound bites and catchphrases.
Yes.
And it's very effective because what happens is that people think they know what wokeness is about. So you have the governor of Florida saying Florida is the state where woke goes to die. Mm. Now, you know, I don't think of him as, I mean, this is a man that wears white boots. So I don't really put a whole lot of stock in what he has to say. But, you know, this was a moment where, you know, they pulled these presidents up in front of hearings in Congress. And again, they sort of made them out to be, and remember, they're all women. They made them out to be these sort of sponsors of wokeness. And, you know, two of them lost their jobs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because the idea of Black people speaking their own truth and telling their own story, that is now viewed as a threat, which is why the Esquire article said that race is a taboo word.
Well, I think I had a friend who didn't like the word African-American. Why can't you just be American? So even African-American, you know, would have that had the same effect. Well, for me, wokeness is not radical. It's responsible. It's what happens when you have a community and the community gets tired of, you know, having blind spots, you know. So that's what I think of it. And it certainly doesn't mean to not love America. It means to be aware of America. It's to know who we are, to know where we came from, and to still want to perfect the union, but with us in it, right?
Well, you know, part of the problem is that a lot of that whiteness, let me phrase it that way, that whiteness is constructed in such a way that for whiteness to thrive, Blackness can't thrive. And so when Blackness starts to thrive, whiteness thinks that you're robbing something from it. And it doesn't work that way. There's enough room in the culture for everybody to have free expression. But this is a moment where you know, it's almost reminiscent of the early 90s when we were going through the whole political correctness thing. And once again, that conversation is a conversation that white people should be having. I'm not interested in having a conversation with white people about ending racism. I didn't invent it. I didn't create white supremacy. I had nothing to do with either of those things. As Toni Morrison puts it, it's white people's problem. They created it, so they should solve it. And so when you talk about a word like woke, it's meant to disrupt any sort of collective effort to challenge anti-Black racism within the white community.
Wow, you've said a lot. And because you mentioned Toni Morrison, I'm going to make the second wow word of wisdom coming from her. Oppressive language does more than represent violence. It is violence. So that kind of adds to what you were saying. And because I do want to bring the tone to make us ponder it and still have a good feeling towards having this knowledge, because sometimes knowledge is powerful. It could be uncomfortable sometimes. I want this knowledge to get us, to make us more comfortable. So I want this amazing information to be ending with D'Angelo's How Does It Feel? Because this is one of your faves.
Thank you. everything that you desire. Let you get a feeling, feeling that I'm feeling. Won't you come closer to me, baby? Hey, now you're already happy.
Oh God, we missed that. How does it feel? How does it feel? I think that something like that was in my uncle's poem there. Something about feeling, having some good feelings. Well, this is the time where I'm going to feel real good asking you to read a poem. I want to make sure you get your poem in. Please tell us the title and whatever you want to introduce, however you want to introduce the poem.
Okay, so this poem is called Requiem for Gwendolyn. It's a poem dedicated to Gwendolyn Brooks. Requiem for Gwendolyn. Where some looked at blackness and saw nightmare, a path through the mind's worst neighborhood. Because she loved us so, she kept one eye peeled, healed a cut, frightened moon. She navigated through midnight's unraveling, its casualties, semi-casualties. She taught us the eye needs grief to get used to the dark. That to be blue even a day meant everything your mother said or thought was true. She declared silence a necessary prelude to joyous laughter and bitter tears. Seeking purchase against the world's savage and starboard list, everybody white, impatient at the slightest delay, she taught us our value lay in knowing waiting's plexus of costs. When the poet wondered aloud if time had come to be shut of the world's hard business, she taught donning the rags of an old man shambling through Bronzeville would yield both peace and pleasure. When the sky piled suddenly with dark nimbus clouds, she prized every thunderclap, felt barren trees shudder, blinked away lightning's steel blue flash, and gave each color in the world a name.
So this is an ode to Gwendolyn Brooks, did you say?
Requiem.
Oh, Requiem. Okay. So Gwendolyn Brooks, she is someone I met. And
me too.
Well, I'm sure you did. A very thick book of, she has a big thick book of poetry, and she's constantly creating poetry. And many people like her, I'm sure like you too, being a poet, you create many more than you actually ever print or ever even recite to other people. How do you make a choice for certain poems to go into a collective or a collection?
Well, there's a reason why we write many more poems than what we
seamless, the seamless Toni Morrison.
That would see the light of day, because some of them are just so bad that you'd be embarrassed. I'd be embarrassed to read them. Some of them are left buried where they lie presently. But I have a book coming out in the late spring, early summer next year, titled In a Gash of Light.
Say that, and, in a gash, G-A-S-H?
Mm-hmm, oh. In a gash of light.
In a gash of light, okay.
And that book came together after I came back from my residency in France. So I wrote or began thinking about a number of the poems that are in the book while I was in France. And it's a collection that I think the best way to describe it, I use jazz and jazz forms as a way to ruminate on and think about deeply human feeling and human loss, but also human community and what binds us together as members of the human race or members of a family. The last portion of the book is the source of a collaboration between myself and two jazz musicians from Philadelphia, Odine Pope and, oh God, I just blinked on his name. Odine Pope and Emmanuel Wentworth. Odine plays tenor and, Emmanuel plays alto saxophone. And so they've written a sort of extended concerto based on my sonnet sequence called Progressions. And that's the last part of the book.
Well, I hope I get to get a copy of that. Share with me when it's published. I definitely will seek
Count
to
on it.
Purchase
Count
it.
On it.
Now, I think I did not share the entire title of today's show or theme, Freedom Under Fire, Sharing What We Are Thankful For in Rhythm and Verse. So what I did was shared some of those favorite verses and some of the music rhythms that you shared with us. So being that this is a month for Thanksgiving, what are you particularly thankful for, may I ask?
Well, as always, I'm thankful for my wife and my children who bring light to my life every day. I'm thankful for friends and family. I grew up with a group of guys just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, and there are about 7 or 8 of us. And we've remained close since we were probably in the 3rd or 4th grade. So we're these guys in their mid 60s, early to mid 60s, and we're still friends. A lot of snaps and a lot of talking about one another and playing the dozens. But these men are really the foundation of everything that I have become as a human being. They're the standard bearers for how I conduct myself. So I'm very thankful for each and every one of them.
How wonderful. I also know that you have joined a fraternity.
Yes. I'm a member of Gamma Xi Phi Fraternity, which is a fraternity for black artists and people who are involved with the arts.
So you have
not just black people. There are actually white members of the fraternity.
Okay.
You have to be committed to the black arts, I guess, and so anybody can be a member, but it's not exclusive. But I've been a member since 2022.
Oh, you can join later in life, a member of the.
Yes, yes. The fraternity is only 12 years old.
Ah.
It was started by some students at Ramapo College in New Jersey.
Okay. And New Jersey.
You could be a member, Kimberly.
Not of a fraternity.
Yes, it's a co-ed fraternity.
I have never heard of such a thing. You know, you've heard it here, folks.
There are men and women.
I didn't hear of it, someone else might not have.
There are men and women in our fraternity.
Okay, so I guess you could think of fraternity as brotherhood with sisters, too.
Yes.
So could we think of sororities, like sisterhood with brothers, the brothers in it, too?
I don't know if any of the Divine Nine want to change it up like
no
that.
That's why they're divine.
we're not one of the Divine Nine, but you know, it's a specialized fraternity, you know, so just like there's a fraternity for engineers or
yes.
You know, people who are in finance, it's a specialized fraternity, but we are really sort of organized around valuing and cherishing art and art making by black people.
You know what? That gives me thanks. That gives me joy, actually, because it should be that way. There shouldn't be anything all one way or one or the other, you know, like gender and everything else that, you know, everything's on a continuum. And that's a good thing, in my opinion.
Well, and my gender politics are such, I wouldn't want to be part of an all male organization.
We're going to have to have a conversation with you again. I can barely speak. I'm doing my best, y'all. Okay. The last word of wisdom, Counted All Joy by Reverend Dwight Andrews. And I'm saying I want this to be the last one because of the musical that we're going to introduce. It's My Favorite Things by John Coltrane Quartet. Now, I have to tell you, I never heard this before, Dr. Beavers.
Really?
Really. Actually, the only three of these songs I've ever heard was How Does It Feel by D'Angelo. And you guess you know why. So you've really opened my mind and my ears. I mean, I know the song from, what is the Sound of Music. And I love it. I could sing the words. But My Favorite Things, John Coltrane Quartet, brought me so much joy. OMG. We want to make sure we have time to share it with you, the listeners. And so because we have a show upcoming right after this, we're going to have to close fairly soon and early. So can I have you, Dr. Beavers, say some closing remarks to the audience, and then we're going to just end it there and close out with the music, and I'll just say my love, beauty, joy that I normally say to the listeners myself.
Well, folks who are interested in reading more of my poetry, there's lots of poetry online that you can find under my name, and lots of videos on YouTube that you can find, and you can write me at hbeavers@upenn.edu. I'd love to hear from people that have read my poetry and encountered some of my other work.
Awesome. And you know what I do want to mention too? I want you to mention, so I'm glad we have some time left. You just got an award recently.
Yes. Yes.
Can you share that?
I was awarded the Faculty Award of Merit by Penn alumni for my work with Penn alumni in a variety of capacities.
Well, you've just worked with me, so I'm going to give you a definite applause for that. And I love my alma mater. I'm so glad I went there, and I'm so glad you're there teaching and paying it forward to this young
student. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Awesome. And you've come from a lot of different schools, many different Ivy League schools and other really great schools, too. So you've been really in the forefront there in education.
Well, you know, considering that my father worked in the Ford plant and my mother was a school crossing guard, I feel proud of the way that my mother made it possible for me to have the sensibility to survive being in two Ivy League schools and then teaching in a third and holding on to myself.
And that just shows that everyone can, right? Everyone can be successful and achieve. We just,
yes.
It does take the village. It takes the good parenting. It takes advocacy. And it takes follow through, but we're getting it done. And we're going to have more from you. Like I said, we're going to keep going. December is another show, so definitely stay tuned with us. We might just have two guests because we have people who want to come on and share their words with you as far as what's happening in during the Christmas break around in the area. So we want to make sure you get the knowledge of that. And again, I'm just going to have Garrett say something real quick about your Thanksgiving. What do you give thanks for?
Absolutely, Kimberly. Thank you so very much. I give thanks for, first and foremost, my mother, Maggie Roach, gone since 2015, sadly, but her spirit carries on evermore, and she is the reason I am the person I am. I have inherited her personality, her steel trap memory that she had, and just anything and everything that's about Garrett Roach has been carried down from my mom. So I cannot thank you enough, Mom. Love you to bits and pieces.
Okay, and I guess I'm going to have to follow up with my family, too. Not everyone can say their family, and then I say nothing. So I want to say thank you to my family. You know who you are, from those that are in Hudson area, from those who are in the Albany area, from those who are in the Philly area, New Jersey, North Carolina, and some really close friends that became family that are in Florida and in Germany, and some new family kind of in Brazil. So I'm international, y'all, family of experiences. And again, I want to just say to the listeners, love, beauty, joy. These are a few of my favorite things, John Coltrane Quartet.
Recording stopped.
Thank you. This is the quickest way to clear out stuck poop.
The number one food.